Hello, hello. Good afternoon on this extremely hot day in Central Illinois and, well, Central Illinois. I meant to say Central USA and then Illinois. My guest today is in Northern Illinois. I'm in Southern Illinois, and it didn't matter where we were. It's still icky hot outside. Yeah. So I hope wherever you are that you are cool and having a nice lemonade or something to keep you refreshed today and all throughout the summer. This is Hashtag No Limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is a program about people who society has placed limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells, and then it reforms into the butterfly. And if that wasn't enough, it then has to struggle to get out of the cocoon in order for its wings to be strong enough for it to fly. And all of that is very difficult, but so is busting through the limits that society places upon a person. And today, I'm so excited to bring my friend Heather to you. Heather has lots of experience of helping people bust through limits, but she also has busted through some limits of her own. And so we're going to talk about all of that stuff today. And Heather, thank you. Welcome. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Shelley. I'm so excited. I cannot wait to share all of my little details with you and how I've grown and how I'm changing things into butterflies.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. So just tell us about your history. Tell us your backstory.
Yeah. So I've always wanted to be a special education teacher, and that's what I currently am. And I've had the desire to help others ever since I was really little. My passion kind of came from the other teachers that I've had, and they just continued to help me grow and evolve and change and blossom and all those things. And so because I had such great teachers, I knew I wanted to go into education. And it was because of one of my teachers in middle school that showed me what a special education classroom was and what this meant, really gave me my passion for wanting to go into special education. It happened to be a self-contained classroom that he had showed me. And I was really confused as to why these students weren't with me, why I didn't know any of them. I didn't recognize any of them. So that's really where things kind of started for me, asking questions. Why are they different than us? Why do they have to be separate from us? And it just continued to grow that I needed to help others and be a part of the special education field.
That's so awesome. My journey is not like that, but kind of like that. I also knew because of great teachers when I was young that I wanted to be a teacher, but I wanted to teach the gen ed pop. And it wasn't until many years later and a little voice in my head recurring telling me, teach special education, teach special education. And then I eventually did. And I'm so thankful that that's where I ended up because I absolutely loved. And I think I would have loved my kiddos in gen ed too, but there was just a different level of love and appreciation and respect for my kiddos that came through special education with me. So I mentioned that you had some of your own limits that you have busted through. And we will talk about the fact that you are the voice, the mind behind Full Sped Ahead. But yesterday you sent out an email to those of us on your email list, and you talked about the fact that when you were young, you had seizures. Mm-hmm. So can you talk about that and tell us, because that in and of itself is having to bust through some limits.
Yeah. So I had childhood epilepsy. So I have grown out of my seizure disorder, but at the time it was very scary. I was in third grade when I had my first seizure, and we don't really know what brought it on. I never had a head injury. There was never anything that was a red flag. I played a lot of sports. I did a lot of activities, but there really wasn't anything that brought it on. It just happened. But then those were reoccurring, and they kept happening every couple days. And so we had evaluations and doctors and MRIs and CAT scans and all these other tests going on, trying to figure out what is this? Where is this coming from? Of course, a slew of medications to figure out which correct dosage is going to work for me, and, you know, missing school for doctor's appointments and missing school for testings and things like that. So with that became all my great teachers that I had, you know, helping me through these times that I had to miss school and I had to, you know, go to these doctor's appointments. So that was something a part of me from third grade until middle school. And so I said middle school is where that teacher showed me special education programs in our middle school. And so through that kind of evolved of like realizing seizures could be a part of a diagnosis for special education. If it was more severe for me, luckily it was not. But I did have the shaking seizures. So that was pretty scary to see and be a part of. And even so, I knew exactly what was going on with my body. So I was able to tell my parents, I'm about to have a seizure. And wow. It was really interesting. I always love talking about it because I could feel my body starting to go. And I said, it's coming, or and whatever. I give my parents some type of signal. And then they'd help talk me out of it. So I was really aware of what was going on around me. I could hear everybody else. But for whatever reason, my body just continued to shake. And for me, it was them talking me through it to relax, to calm down, to not fight it, help me come out of my seizures faster. So if that helps anybody else, like, please take that information. But those are some pretty scary years for me, and unsure if I could drive a car or things like that. There was a lot of unknowns growing up for my family and my parents and myself. So that was a part of me. And, you know, I've come from that. And it's, again, part of my story of special education.
Yeah. So one of the things I know from adults that have had seizures, just, you know, all of a sudden never had them at any other point in their life, driving the car is definitely an issue because you don't know if another seizure is going to happen. And so the state mm-hmm. limits you on, you know, how long you have to go without a seizure before you can drive. So obviously that's one limit that you have overcome. What other things, like how did everyone react? Like how were the students with you when this happened, your classmates? And did they happen at school more often than not? Or did, if I remember the note, they didn't happen at school very often.
No, they didn't. Mine happened right before I was falling asleep in bed. So luckily I was safe in bed. But you're right. There came a lot of other things like precautions of playing sports, getting head injuries, anything like that. My family was really cautious about all of that and, you know, always had to have a helmet on. And I think I was at the time where softball, they were starting to do like face shields and doing more of that for like facial safety. Right. But like it became a more of evolved like headgear ish type of thing for me. Right. Just to make sure I was staying safe because I was a softball pitcher in elementary and middle school. So I was there. If I was going to get hit in the head, it was going to be there. So that was a big precaution we took, is making sure like the sports and activities I did, I was really safe with. And then of course, riding a bike. You know, that was the other big one of me being a kid trying to ride a bike. You have to wear a helmet. And that was not cool to do, but also understand that was really safe to do.
Right. Yeah. And that's so hard because kids, I think, are often honest and they don't mean to be brutal with their honesty, but it is because, you know, we're used to having adults be very gentle with us sometimes when it's an, you know, hey, this is not normal, or this isn't like, you know, this is uncool. Yeah. You know, and so adults tend to soften it a little bit where kids are like, dude, what is up? You know?
Yeah, definitely. And then the other thing is I was never allowed to do sleepovers because if I was going to have a seizure at somebody else's house, my family was really protective of that. And because I think there was that part of like the other kids would judge me and, you know, ask questions. Right. And so I never really had sleepovers as a kid either. Just
no one slept in your house?
No, never.
Okay.
It was not a thing that we did. I think it was just because of the dignity and safety and for myself. And I hated my parents for it at the time, but I understand why now.
Yeah. Yeah. In hindsight, right? Everything is so clear.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So I don't know if you'll remember this, but so you said you started having them in third grade, right?
Yeah.
How were you academically prior to having the seizure and then afterwards? And did people treat you differently after the seizure as far as like what they expected of you academically?
Yeah, definitely. I was always a pretty good student. I would say I had an older brother that always got straight A's, was in honor roll, all that fun stuff. So I always tried to excel and get to where he was at. School for me was always really kind of easy too. And I don't think I've realized the struggles that I did go through at that time until now. Because in fourth and fifth grade, of course, medication changes, all the hormones, you know, you're getting bigger. And, I was very hormonal in fourth and fifth grade, sixth grade, even seventh grade. You know, and everybody just kind of amounted it to the, you know, puberty of growing up. But we did realize it was medication I was on that made me gain a ton of weight. I know you asked academically, but these are some other things that like played
into it. Well, no, yeah. I mean, anything school related, really.
Yeah, I was really mean. I was very mean. I called my mom bad names. She talked about it all the time, how much she hated this time for me, because I was not a nice person to her or to others that I was around, but we did amount it to, that was the medication I was on. It was Depakote, I think, at the time. And it did, it made me a not so nice person. And I was not so nice to friends, not so nice to teachers. And I don't think I realized it academically at the time, but I had always struggled with reading comprehension. And I love reading. Like, I will read books. I will do audiobooks. I will do podcasts. Like, I love learning and reading. But for whatever reason, when we had to do those reading fluency passages, I was terrible at them. And that was so devastating to me because reading and social studies were more of my thing. Science and math, not so much. So when that came through in like fourth and fifth grade, when we had to do those fluency tests, I would score significantly below everybody else. And so they had like kind of given me some response to intervention and given me some more support and extra practice and things like that. But I truly do think it is from the seizures. I think there was something neurological that had went on where that just never came back. And even now, so I say this all the time, that my left side, which is my seizures are technically from the right side of the brain. My left side of my body is weaker than my right side of the body. So if you touch my fingers on my left hand, I can feel it, but not as much as I do on my right. So if you pricked my finger, I might not notice, but on my right side, I can. And again, that's the weirdest thing. And I don't know if it's amounted to it or not, but it's something I had noticed about myself that like, oh, I could get hit in the left side of the leg. Maybe not notice it as much as I do on my right. And so again, these are all kind of factors that I've realized over time that reading comprehension kind of been a struggle for me growing up, and that was something that I had to really work on. And then again, not being able to feel completely on the right, on the left side of my body, was just another different thing that I've realized over time that that's just who I am now. And I have had a recent MRI in the last couple of years or so, and they did say that the growth of my brain never truly fully developed from where the seizures were. So it's possible I can have a seizure again. So that's always been really scary too, is that they could be coming back. So I do have to get regular MRIs now.
And so with that information, are you allowed to drive?
I am. Okay. I am, because I haven't had anything to show otherwise.
Yeah.
But yeah, they said just something to watch out for.
Are there any precautions that you have to do? And obviously you won't know this, but do you think that you would recognize one coming on like you had when you were a kid?
I do think so. Even if they are similar to how they were before, I think I would, because for me, it was a pattern of my legs. So when I was laying on my back and my right leg was bent like to my knee to like make a four, that's when the seizure would start always. So when I would lay in bed, I know it's the weirdest thing. I told my doctors this too. And I was like, every time it happens, my right leg is bent to like the knee of my left leg. And it's like a four. my legs are in the figure four.
Right.
And they're like, well, you need to know that. Like, that's important. I'm like, but what are you guys going to do with that? What
if right, exactly.
Do I have to tape my feet down? Like, what do I need to do? So again, another weird part of that was something I was aware of. So now I just don't lay like that anymore.
Well, and yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like, okay, did your leg go that way? And then you're like, oh, the seizure's coming. Or were you like, I used to stand like a flamingo all the time. And so I'm thinking, or like, have you ever tested it? Like, did you put your legs in that position and see if something?
Yeah, I mean, I can do that. If I like stand or lay down, and I can do that and like fall asleep. Like, it doesn't trigger it anymore. But like, that was always the start of it. And those would already be there. And then I could feel myself going into it. Is the weirdest thing. I don't know.
That is, wow. Yeah. I'm so amazed by our brains and how everything just fires or misfires or, you know, is how everything affects everything else. And so, yeah, that I find that really interesting. And
like, I agree. And I've done a lot of like my own research in it and like figuring out what my things were. And, you know, it is, it's really interesting. Our brain is so, so interesting.
Yeah. And I'll be honest, I really don't know a lot about child epilepsy. Do you know like the statistics or how does it affect people?
I don't know the statistics. At least I haven't looked at it in a couple of years, but I just know that if you get it as a child, there's a possibility that you can grow out of it once you hit puberty. And that just happened for me, which was just so interesting. So yeah, we did. We waited a year after I hit puberty and then started weaning me off medications and I was fine.
Wow. Yeah. I remember a classmate of mine in high school would have seizures occasionally. And there was one time when she and I were just hanging out and I don't even know why, but we were at, the baseball field. There wasn't a game going on. I just guess we were just walking around and that's just kind of where we ended up. And she ended up having a seizure in the dugout. And it was a pretty big one. And I would say we were maybe eighth grade freshmen, maybe sophomores. I don't really quite remember how old we were, but yeah, I was like, and this was long before the days of cell phones.
Oh yeah.
So, I mean, thankfully she had already kind of told me what to do in like what had happened to her and other experiences. So I kind of knew what to do with her, but it was very frightening. Like you said earlier, to witness it.
It is.
And then I can't imagine what it's like to feel it going through it. And it sounds like you actually could comprehend and hear I guess I've always assumed, probably incorrectly, it sounds like, that people were sort of unaware of what was happening.
Yeah. I mean, and there are some that you are unaware of what's going on around you and you wake up and you don't know where you are or what happened. But I was really aware of what was going on around me and I could hear people and I mean, I couldn't like grab things or anything, like I couldn't get up, but my body had taken over or my brain or whatever it was, you know, that triggered. And but yeah, like I knew exactly where I was, what was going on. I'd wake up and see my family around me and go, okay, we're good now. I can go back to sleep. Thanks.
Wow. And your mom and dad are like, no, I'm not going back to sleep for a while.
Yeah, they're awake now.
Yeah.
So mine were short-lived too. I know lots of people have had seizures that last like 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes and beyond. And mine were always under 2.5 minutes, if anything. Most of mine were 30 seconds to a minute.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I've had students with seizures and I had one that had them very sporadically and I had one that had them almost constantly daily. Unfortunately, the one who had them almost constantly daily ended up with one that lasted over 20 minutes and we did have to call an ambulance. And it was the first time I remember ever being in an ambulance because I rode with her from the school to the hospital. And so that's something that when you're going through training to be a teacher, they don't talk to you about.
That you might have to leave your classroom to go in an ambulance because your child, a student of yours, needs your attention right now.
Yeah. And that was, I mean, it only happened once in my whole teaching career, but still it was like, oh, okay. Thank God that there, you know, are some aides in the building who have teaching certification so they can take over my class. So I can go be with this student. And Yeah, it was an interesting. So you said it was around sixth grade, I think, that this teacher took you down to and showed you the special education room. So, excuse me. I'm sorry. Prior to that, did you really have much knowledge about special education?
So I did. And you guys are going to get this in my email if you're on it. That's actually next week's story, Shelly.
I'm sorry. Don't listen. If you're on her email list, don't listen.
You're fine. So Shelly's going to hear the story now twice because she'll hear it next week too. But I did. I had two friends who had siblings with disabilities. And so that was always really interesting to me too, is going, well, why are they different than me? I had one friend who had a brother who was significantly older than us. I would say he was in his 20s when I first met him. And we were probably 9 or 10 years old. So probably about 10 years difference. And when he had talked to me, he was talking to me like he was a toddler. And I thought that was really interesting that he had a lot of like childlike interests and fine motor difficulties and speech difficulties and things like that. So that was always really eye-opening to me that like, why doesn't he have a job and driving a car and doing other things that, you know, typical 20-year-olds are doing, hanging out with their friends, with a girlfriend, whatever. And so that was one of my first interactions where I started asking questions of, you know, why doesn't he do all these things? Why, you know, and, you know, the family had explained to me that he has a disability. He has an intellectual disability. He has the cognitive abilities of an 18-month-old. So that was really eye-opening to me, too. So that was one of the interactions I had. And then my other friend had a sister with cerebral palsy. I can never say it right. So that was also something that was different for me too, because she looked a little different, but she was pretty like similar to us. And we always would play with her and treat her like she was one of us. Like it wasn't any different other than she walked a little differently than us and her bone structure looked a little different than us. But that was part of my growing up as well. And so within between that time of me getting my seizure diagnosis and then having friends with students with children with disabilities or siblings with disabilities, then I was asking more questions and getting more involved and going, what is this? So,
right. That's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about Full Sped Ahead. I said before that you are the voice, the mind, everything behind Full Sped Ahead. What is that?
So Full Sped Ahead is my business. It's everything that I've wanted and feel that special education might be missing. So Full Sped Ahead started in 2017 when I realized that teachers didn't have the supports they needed in the classroom. And
I'm going to stop you right there. Stop, because most of the people who watch this are parents.
Okay.
So I want you to say that again, because I want that to really sink in, because I don't think parents understand that. I think they believe that we as teachers have the world at our fingertips a lot of times. Wouldn't that be nice?
That would be nice. So special education teachers do not have the supports that they need. I was in a district that did not support me at all. I had no training. I had no curriculum. I had no understanding of classroom management or how a special education classroom should be run. The people I talked to would just say, just do it. You just kind of throw something together and that's fine. No, it is not fine. Our kids deserve better.
Yeah. So I'm going to stop you again because I want to clarify something. You went into college to get a special education teaching degree.
Correct.
So it wasn't like a lot of the people out there that went into college to get a gen ed degree. And then they're like, oh, I'll get duly certified. And, you know, or people that have been in business or been in other professions and then have come in and said, oh, I'll get a master's degree or I'll get some sort of quick certification to be in special education. And so you have a little bit more, or at least I do, more understanding for those people that they may not have it all and understand it all because their education was a little bit, but you went to school to do this and you still came out of your university going, I don't know.
Yeah. And I know my university prepared me better than any other school in our area, because I heard such high good things from our programs. And we did have a lot of student teaching and on job sites and, you know, really shadowing and all those were great, but they didn't prepare me for the classroom that I had. There is so much of special education that they have to teach us. Because you could be a resource teacher, you could be an inclusion teacher, you could be a transition teacher, you can be an early childhood teacher. You know, what I do for transition is not the same thing I do for early childhood. Right. So they kind of have to teach everybody in the special education field, not really knowing what kind of classroom we're going to get. So that's right. Why I think now we're starting to see more of the certifications of mild to moderate, or seeing more autism specific degrees, because if I'm teaching a transition classroom versus teaching an early childhood classroom, I need different trainings and different supports. And that starts at the university level.
Yeah. And when I went through college, I started off, and my journey is speckled as far as getting my degree. It wasn't go and finish in a short amount of time. It was trickle through until it was like 10 years later. And I finally got finished up the 4-year degree. But so when I started, we could still specifically be licensed in specific learning disabilities or behavioral disabilities or your mild, moderate, severe, profound, that sort. But then by the time I was wrapping up, I had to switch a couple of classes because the state of Illinois changed their licensing to, if you get a special education licensure, you can teach everything, 3K to 12, every disability, anything and everything that falls under the special education umbrella.
That's what I have. I have the K to 22.
Yeah. And actually it's 3 to 22 technically, but unless, or at least mine is, but unless I go and get a couple of more early childhood courses, I can't teach early childhood. Even though I'm certified from 3 to. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the only caveat there. It's like, you can't really teach early childhood, but if you take these classes, you can.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. So for those, for any parents who are watching and you live in Illinois, that's what happens in our universities. That's how we're getting trained for the last 20 plus years. And I don't know how it is across the country, but that's how it is here in Illinois, is that you're just under this whole umbrella. And so, yeah, I'm glad to hear that they are starting to separate that out again, because it is. I mean, I feel really bad for our gen ed teachers. And this only developed since I left teaching, because I didn't really think about it when I was in teaching, how little education they get as far as how to help kiddos in special education that come into their classrooms. Mm-hmm. And you know, I knew that I had to do all kinds of on the job training and learning, figuring stuff out. So I was like, well, why aren't they? Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, when you're starting from here versus when you're starting from here, you're at such a deficit. It's almost impossible to make it up.
Yeah.
Definitely. So yeah. Yeah.
And okay, I don't think you mentioned I'm in Illinois as well.
Yeah.
I don't think we mentioned that. So just in case anybody missed that, we both are in Illinois.
Yeah. Yeah. You're just way far north and I'm just way far south.
Yep.
So, yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So I'm sorry. I kind of sidelined us there. So you went in, you got this education, you got out, you got into your classroom and they were like, so just do it.
Yeah. So I did my first year. I just did it. And that second year, as I was going back ready for the next school year, about a month into the school year started, the school says, so you sure you want to be a teacher? You sure you want to be in special education? And I'm looking at my administration going, this is 2 months into the school year. You're telling me you don't want me here.
Right. Yeah. That didn't sound very good.
So that came to a shock when this was something that I was so passionate about for years. And of course, you know, going through all my schooling, I thought this was going to be great. You know, big slap in the face there. So, you know, I reached out to our curriculum coordinator, our instructional designer, our behavior specialist. I reached out to everybody I could to be like, hey, this is what happened. My administration is not supportive of it, of me being here, but what can I do to improve? They never set anything up for me for that.
Right.
But I reached out to as many people as I could, our technology coordinator, our AT coordinator, everybody. I really just tried assistive technology coordinator. Sorry. I tried to reach out to as many people as I could. Hey, come observe my class. Give me some feedback. I will change whatever you need me to do. So I spent that entire year, trying to improve my practices. That's when I kind of started to like finding this Instagram world where I've kind of started building the business of Full Sped Ahead. Reaching out to other teachers. How are you doing this? What did you do to do this? Because apparently what I was doing was not what that school had wanted. So little to say at the end of that year.
And yet all they tell you was, well, just do it. And then, but that's not what we want you to do.
Yeah. Or just shut up and do it. It was more of the conversation. So end of that year, I got let go. They didn't want me back, and that's fine. I found another position, and that's my district I've been at for the last 5 years. And I think I've done a really great job there, but it's because of the social media world where Full Sped Ahead is, that I've really been able to connect with other educators, other thought leaders in this, community, and really honed in on my own practice and my own classroom management, my own classroom structure, and figured out what works and what doesn't for me and my students. And every year it could be a little different. And that's, I think, the hard part about special education is you can't really do the same thing from year to year. You have to change it based on the students in your room, the parents that you have, the, the assistants in your classroom, the staff you support, all of that kind of has to change from year to year. And that could be the hardest part too, is that constant flexibility that you need to make sure your classroom's running as smoothly as it can.
Yeah. And you didn't say other than that they just didn't rehire you at the end of the year, but I want to make it also known that in Illinois, and again, I don't think this happens everywhere, but in Illinois, if you are a teacher in a district within the first 4 years of you teaching in that district, they can opt not to rehire you, and they don't have to give you a reason why. They just say, we're not bringing you back next year. So even myself, I taught in one district and had like 14 years of teaching experience. I went to the district that ended up being my last district, and I had a similar situation. I loved it there. I thought everything was going great, but because it was my first year in that district,
mm-hmm.
at the end of the year, they're like, nope, we're not going to bring you back next year. And they wouldn't give me any reasons. They didn't have to.
Nope.
And I want to let people understand that too, because I don't think that happens everywhere across the country. And I don't know that parents understand that either. And I think that for my situation, at least, it was hurtful to be told I'm not being brought back the following year, but it wasn't as detrimental to my financial livelihood as it could be to other people. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times when our teachers don't stand up for the parents or the students in the meetings, their jobs are kind of on the line. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be that way. They should be allowed to express their opinions, and especially if they have data that backs it up.
Yeah.
But I've had so many parents say that over the years, like, well, the teacher tells me blah, 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 behind the closed doors. But when we get to the IEP meeting, they didn't say anything. They didn't back me up.
Yeah.
And it's very devastating to the parents. And I'm not saying that the teacher shouldn't back you up when they've done so previously. But when they're in those meetings with their administration, they could technically have their job on the line.
Yeah. And that's the hardest part, because I know there's been many parents that have reached out to me over the years after I'd left that position going, what happened? Why did you leave? We loved you. They didn't love me. And that was all that mattered. It's heartbreaking because you, as a parent of a child with a disability, you could have 3 or 4 different teachers go through. And each year you might get a new teacher. And so just know it's not necessarily the teacher's you know, I mean, again, it could be different in different states, but it's not necessarily the teacher's decision. Sometimes they're just let go. And, you know, some of them can interview back to go get their position back. And some of them are just like literally let go and they have to find another job. So just know it's not you. It's not, you know, it's not them necessarily. Right. I mean, it might be, but that's the frustrating part is you've started something really good with this teacher and you got a plan and you got something going on and they might just be gone the next year. And it wasn't in their control and it's definitely not in your control.
Right. Yeah. As the parents, for sure. So, okay. I'm sorry. I keep interrupting you to clarify things.
Oh, I appreciate it. I really do.
I know from my own experiences that I've had similar things happen. And I, having now worked with families specifically more so for the last 5 years, I see there's a lot of things that they assume. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we all make assumptions constantly about situations, but when I can express to them like, oh, well, this is what's happening, that tends to lessen the stress or maybe not the stress, but the anger mm-hmm. of, you know, why isn't this person doing this? Or why isn't this teacher doing this? And, you know, like you, like this part of this conversation has started where you walked into a classroom, there's no curriculum because it does change from even quarter to quarter and mm-hmm. year to year based on mm-hmm. who's in your classroom. That's why it's an individualized education program and it's an Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, because we do have to find things that work specifically for the students that are assigned to us as the special education department. You've done all these things. So now you're in year three and you're mm-hmm. at this district that you're in now mm-hmm. and you're finding things on social media. Thank God.
Yeah.
And yes. So keep talking. I'm sorry. I keep interrupting.
No, you're fine. Yeah. So yeah, I came up with the idea for Full Sped Ahead after I had gotten married in 2017 when I was starting my master's and to get for curriculum instruction with a focus in teacher leadership, which I now think is known as instructional coaching. So in 2017 was when I was like, all right, time to take things a little bit more seriously. So I started kind of putting ideas out there. Here, try this in your classroom. Here, try this, and be more of a kind of thought leader in the public space of, you know, social media. And it didn't go serious for me. Serious is like, you know, actually putting really good content out there for other teachers, right. Until probably the pandemic. So I had finished my master's degree in May of 2020. After the world had shut down, you know, and I know teachers were struggling to find digital things and, you know, how do I get on this digital space now? And, you know, what is going to happen next year? And there was some confusion if my husband was going to have a job, if I was going to have a job. So, you know, I needed to find a way to, you know, yes, bring in some extra income because the world was shutting down. What was I going to do? You know, I didn't know if we would be going back into a school building in the following school year or not. I had no idea. So that's when I had started putting more resources out there for teachers as far as paid resources through the platform Teachers Paid Teachers. So the teachers can buy lessons and materials and activities so that they can do those in their classroom or on the digital space. So that's when that was brought in. Over that summer, I had built my website to kind of have more blogs and content there that teachers could find some information, because as much information that I know, I want to be able to put it out to the world in as many spaces as I could. Because who's on TikTok is not on Twitter, and who's on Facebook is not on Instagram. And, you know, there's not enough people that I can even reach. And I just want to keep reaching more people to help better education for special educators who don't have the supports that they need and need somebody to turn to ask questions, because I've been there. And that's what it comes down to for me, is knowing I lived in a period when I didn't have the supports that I needed and I didn't have the people to turn to answer questions. So that's where I really, really needed to give this stuff to educators, knowing how much we can struggle and struggle alone. So after I had built all of that, the idea for a mentorship program kind of came around, because I'm helping teachers and I'm giving all this stuff away. But a lot of people wanted like more one-on-one time and more like, hey, this is the situation going on in my classroom right now. I need some help. And so that's when the mentorship kind of came in for me. And I created a mentorship program specifically for self-contained teachers. And I've been supporting them all for the last school year. And then we're going to continue into this school year. And I'm adding new people daily to my mentorship program. We're meeting weekly. And yeah, we can meet one-on-one or in a group setting, which is amazing. So I'm just being able to help educators is really what lights my fire.
Yeah. And it's awesome. And I direct teachers to your products frequently. When you just, was it last week, put out the digital data collection, I was like, oh my God, everybody, you got to get this, because data collection is a difficult concept for a lot of teachers. And I see that there are a lot of people, like I'm on a couple different special ed groups in Facebook, and I see that a lot of them are kind of balking at doing data collection because they presume that data collection is going to take time away from teaching, and it doesn't have to. It should just be part of the whole everything. Yeah. And so people are, I heard people saying, well, I'm not going to do data collection because then it doesn't take, that's, you know, that's just the latest and greatest thing. And I'm like, no, it's not the latest and greatest thing. It's the thing that we should be doing all the time. It's what the law says. We have to have data. And so, yeah, when I saw that, I was like popping it everywhere that I could possibly pop it and not get in trouble or kicked out of a group for advertising.
That's true. That's the hard part about Facebook groups.
Yeah. It's like, oh, okay. I can't put that there. I can put it over here. But yeah, you know, because I have my own Facebook group as well, and it's for teachers and parents. And, you know, so for any of my teachers that are watching, you know, Heather is amazing with data collection specifically are the things that I look to you for, but I know you have all kinds of other stuff. So do you want to talk a little bit about some of the other stuff that you do?
Yeah. So, I don't know if I really specified, but I do work currently with a middle school population. And I always say this is the funny like age between like, we're not children anymore, but like, we're not quite young adults yet. That's kind of that transition time. And so I try to find that happy medium in my classroom of like, we're working on like child skills, but also in a age appropriate, we're almost high schoolers type of way. So, you know, yes, I have a lot of students that are significantly below grade level. And so they're working on academic things like counting and color identification, which I will never put a piece of paper in front of them and say, what color is this? Because, you know, what is that really teaching the kid? And also, they've probably been working on it for 6 years or more now. So that's the big part about the resources that I create is trying to find age-appropriate ways or functional ways that I can teach these skills to them, whether that's colors in community signs or colors in foods. You know, what's a red apple versus a blue apple or green apple?
Like, oh, that would be bad if it was blue.
Blue apple, y'all throw that one out. So, you know, things like that, where it's like, you know, what's the difference between a red Granny Smith or a red Delicious and a Granny Smith apple? Like, they're different colors. Okay, cool. What color is this one? What color is that one? So, and bringing it into more of a functional way. And then also being able to reach grade level standards. So like fractions, like a lot of my kids are still working on number identification. So if they say 3/4, I'm like, yes, 3/4. Yes, we're almost there. Got it. Okay. Like, it's hard to read fraction, but then we might look at it in measurement tools. So like using that 3/4 cup to make cookies or do something like that, where I'm working on more of bringing it into their daily lives, bringing it into practice. So they're not just sitting in front of a computer or in front of flashcards going, what is this? What is this? What is this? So,
right.
And that's just really something I work on with my resources. Like I said, there's a lot of that functional life skills types of things. I also am starting to bring more of those teacher resources, like you've seen, the data collection forms, because that is something that needs to happen in our classroom. And you're right, it is very cumbersome sometimes, but there's ways that you can mainstream it to make it easier for you in the classroom.
Yeah, absolutely. And data collection was something that I've always enjoyed reading the results. I can't always say that I enjoyed doing the data collection, but that's another important factor is, okay, I have this whole mound of data. Now, mm-hmm. am I going to do anything with it to change so that I can reach the student better? I saw an infographic recently where it was a whole mound of all different colored Legos, and they said, that's the data. And then they put them all in by their color, and it's like, now this is sorted. And then they put them into like stacks, you know, and said, okay, this is whatever. And then they have a house built with all these Legos. They're like, and this is the data as a story. And now you know what to do with it. That's and cool. I was like, oh, that's really good. Because yeah, if you just have that whole mound of all the different colored Legos and you don't do anything with it, except just say, okay, here's the data. Yeah. Then it doesn't do what it's supposed to do, to drive the education so that you know what's working and what's not working for the students. Unfortunately, I have seen, and I'm sure I did it myself, you know, too much. Oh, here's a flashcard. What's this color? Or, you know, here's the computer. What's this game? I mean, I tried to not do to. What I.
And you do. You have to do those on occasion. I'm not saying they don't have their reasoning, but skill drill is a thing of the past, right? We need it on occasion, but we're not sitting there with flashcards for hours on end expecting the kid to identify their multiplication tables. Like it's just not how kids are learning anymore.
So. Yeah, exactly. And that's very important to understand that too, is that kids are learning differently now. Mm-hmm. And so we have to try to figure out, okay, we have these things and we know that these things work, but how do we bring them into the 21st century or 20 whatever century we're in? I don't even know.
Today's world.
And get all those things so that we can reach the students that we need to reach. You're helping not just teachers bust through limits, but I mean, you're helping students on a daily basis. And I do want to just quickly talk about self-contained, because I know in a lot of states, they don't use that terminology. So just explain a little bit what that looks like for you as a self-contained teacher.
Yeah. So self-contained means that the students are with one teacher for the majority of their school day. And then for me, that means 40 to 75% of their school day, they are with me. And so most of my kids fall within that 50 to 75% of their day. They are in my class with me and a group of other students. And then there's typically a classroom aide or two with there to support them. And so then they get to be pushed out into the general education classes for that other 50 to 25% of their day. They go to PE. They also might have an adapted PE class. They have an elective, a general education elective class, which my assistants would go with them as well. And then they also have lunch with the general public as well. So that's what makes it a self-contained class for me.
Yeah. And so when I taught, I had at the school that I was at the longest, I had K through four, what we call a resource. And then I had K through eight self-contained. So I had everything. And what you mentioned earlier about being on, and I think you call it a special education island.
Oh, yeah.
And it is so true, especially in rural schools, which is what most of the schools around me are, is that we do just have one special education teacher for an entire building of all grade levels, or and some areas around here are a little bit bigger, and so they may have one special education teacher for K through two, but it's still like hundreds of kids, you know. And so yeah, you do feel like you're by yourself because every other teacher in the building is a gen ed teacher and they don't get what you do. And it is very lonely feeling. I think that helps us though understand the parents of the students that we work with, because I can't tell you how many parents I've had over the years tell me that they feel alone.
Yeah.
no matter how many family members they have supporting them, no matter, you know, it just seems like nobody gets what they're going through.
Yeah. And that's part of why I've gotten into the master IEP coach thing, which I know Shelly is a part of.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about that. We're both master IEP coaches.
Yeah. So because of that world of special ed teachers feeling so alone and by themselves, I hated feeling like I had to battle parents. And that's not the case, because they feel alone in their own world because nobody understands what their child has gone through. Nobody understands the diagnosis. Nobody understands this. And when I started to have more of those communications with families of, tell me your story. Give me the information that is stressing you out. Tell me how I can help. And having more of that partnership between parents was really where I found my love for the Master IEP Coach Program. And I could hear the sides of the parents saying, we feel so alone. The diagnosis was terrible. The doctors are terrible. The schools won't help me. And that's where I fell in love with your book as well, because seeing the parent perspective of things helped me become a better educator, that I was more open to listening and understanding what the parents have gone through and what they're continuing to go through on a daily basis. Because understanding that your child is up at 2 a.m. is not something that I know, but I can see that when the kid has now come to school and they've been up all night and they're struggling to do anything academically. So then I'm trying to support them in the classroom, but then having that conversation with you going, yeah, they've been up since overnight and me too. Oh my gosh, you get some rest. I got this, because right. You need to get the rest too. So, you know, that all kind of came full circle for me in the last year or two, is that needs to be more of a collaborative piece of what are parents needing? What are teachers needing? And why are we feeling so alone? And nobody to talk to when we should be talking to each other. This is exactly what both of us are going through.
Yeah, exactly. And thank you for saying that about my book, because that is exactly what I wanted it to do, was to give that perspective. Because as I said, I was in this one district for a very long time, and I had the great privilege to know my families very well because of working with them for so long. And I just felt like their stories needed to be told, because they were going through like exactly what you said. You know, they would be up in the middle of the night. I had self-contained in resource, and even my kiddos in resource, you know, they have a lot of issues too that need to be communicated to the gen ed staff, whomever they're with. Yep. Throughout their day, you know, so having communication plans, and it doesn't have to be a formalized in the IEP communication plan, but knowing that you can reach out to your child's teacher, or knowing that you can reach out to your student's parents, and it's not going to be construed as a bad thing, mm-hmm. is so important. I mean, I grew along with my students, and their parents grew along with us as well, because we did collaborate a lot. And I did find out things that, like you said, you know, you wouldn't know those things. Still, the story of Rose and the dad putting her in my vehicle and saying, you know, she's never gone anywhere with anybody but us. Mm-hmm. It was like the weight of the world was just put on my shoulders. Mm-hmm. And yet we every day receive these kids at school, and we don't think about that. No. We don't think about the anxiety that the parents could have sending their child to school every day, sending them to this environment that is supposed to be a safe, wonderful place, but it isn't always.
Yeah.
And, you know, just trying to remember that and understand that parent's perspective and have more of a collaborative approach with our parents. So Heather, we have about 5 minutes. And I want to make sure that, you know, I know we've talked about full sped ahead, and I know that we've, you know, but I want to make sure that we've covered anything that you want covered. And I apologize. Normally I am better about this, and I didn't do it today, but I normally will have like the website scrolling across the bottom. So I'm going to put that in. It's just full sped ahead, right?
Yes. Fullspedahead.com. Yeah. I think this conversation was just so intriguing that I was really wrapped up in it too. think we shared a lot of really good knowledge here.
Yeah. And you're doing, and you kind of hinted at this before, but in your, I think it's in your Facebook group, that you are doing the, what did you call them? Weekly socials or something?
Special ed socials.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had teamed up with a couple of my friends in the field that we've kind of just become friends over the years and realized, you know, that there's a need here for supporting other teachers. And all of us kind of have our own little desires that we've kind of been doing on our own of helping educators and giving pieces of information and follow us here and chat with us here. And last summer, I had actually done a couple online live PDs for free. Come to the Zoom call. It's on this time and day. There'll be a recording. And it worked out really well last summer. And I really did enjoy it. It was kind of a highlight of my summer of being able to help other educators. And that was before I had my mentorship program. So then it kind of evolved into my mentorship program. But then after talking to my friends, we've kind of decided, let's all put our heads together. The four of us, let's give as much information as we can over the summer about, you know, working with paraprofessionals and setting up a classroom and what is a functional life skill? What does that mean? And what can you do to teach it? And kind of like the big hot topics for special ed teachers. So we are going to be doing live PD all summer long, twice a week, Thursdays and Sundays. Those will all be recorded and in our private Facebook group as the replays will be there if you can't make it live. So that's what we're doing.
And is there a cost for that or is this free?
No, totally free.
That's amazing.
I just can't wait.
Yeah, that's exciting. So if you don't already follow her, she, as she mentioned, Instagram is really her jam, but she is on all the other social media as well. Full Sped Ahead is what she's called everywhere, right? I don't think you have any other. So make sure if you are a special education teacher that you are following her. Check her out on Teachers Pay Teachers. She is, I mean, her stuff, I just love looking at her stuff. I'm not in the classroom anymore, but I'm like, oh, if I was in the classroom, I'd be using that and I'd be using that and I'd be using that. So I do try to, like I said, when that digital data collection came out, I shared that out with my teachers because it is so important. And I mean, like you have your boom cards and which if you're not teaching anymore, you don't know what those are. But if you are teaching, you're probably familiar with what boom cards are. If you're not, go check her out on Teachers Pay Teachers and find out what they are. They are so cool. And she's so creative with everything that she makes. And I'm a little fangirling here because I just think her stuff is so cool and it's so creative and it's so needed and it is pretty individualized, even though you're sending it out to the masses. So to me, that's incredibly impressive. So I appreciate everything that you are doing and so appreciate you being here. Final words, final wrap up. What have you got? No pressure.
I feel like we've said so much. I just want to tell everybody, whether you're a parent or a teacher, really take it slow. Really enjoy those moments and get to know whatever information you're looking for, find it. It's out there, you know, and if you are really struggling, like I am always responding to emails, messages, like if you really just need somebody to talk to about anything, whether you're a parent or a teacher or an admin or a therapist or whatever it is you are, you're not alone. And, you know, this struggle is hard. And I want to be able to help you through it. So, you know, you're not alone out there. There's other people that you can talk to and reach out to. So that's all I really have to say.
And absolutely, she really does. Even before she and I became friendly and friends, she really, I mean, like I'd reach out to her in Instagram or through email and she does. She responds fairly quickly. And I'm always amazed at how fast she responds, to be perfectly honest, because I know how many followers she has. I'm like, how do you respond to everybody so fast? But she does it. She's just amazing. So again, Heather, thank you so, so much. I look forward to seeing you in person next month.
We will be going to
a Master IEP Coach VIP conference in July. And it's a wonderful time. If you want to know more about the Master IEP Coach program, you can reach out to either one of us and we will be happy to tell you about that program as well. And next week, oh gosh, I have another Master IEP Coach on. I think it's Abby, but I don't want to say that for sure because I forgot to look before I came on. So join me next week and find out who it is.
Thank you, Shelley.
Stay cool. Bye.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.